Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Hey, Andrew, how are you? How's life?
Oh, doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of those weekends, I football-wise anyway, I was just like, okay. There were a few games. I feel like I watched a lot of stuff. You know, I know there was only a few games, but I feel like I saw a lot. And then, you know, it was obviously I switched to NFL mode on Sunday, even though I watched the games on Saturday, obviously, as well. It's a great time if you're a dual code supporter, that you like both codes of football, because you get your soccer in the morning and then you have these fantastic NFL matchups.
This weekend in the NFL is my favorite of the year.
Oh,
Four games, and you've kind of weeded out the pretenders. Like, you've got eight teams left that are legit, usually. Mm. I think this weekend's the best.
Yeah, and there was compelling games in the Premier League. I mean, you know, Forest and Brentford was interesting. I feel like I kind of looked at the other side of things, the lesser studied mammals of the Premier League. West Ham and Sheffield United was, I mean, a thrilling finish. At the end of that game had everything. And then, you know, I'm plugged into the Bundesliga right now as well, which is really, really great, and long may that continue.
And Spain, I thought La Liga delivered one of its most incredible weekends of the year with what happened in the Girona match, Real Madrid's. I mean, we'll get to it, but the controversy of that game was hilarious. So we'll talk about that. Barcelona had an incredible. I mean, it was La Liga was on fire this weekend.
I gave La Liga short shrift.
Well, don't worry, I got you.
Oh, I know you're our La Liga correspondent. You're our man in Madrid, old Andy.
Andres.
There was one point though this weekend where I was like, okay, do something other than sports, because I had just finished one of the NFL games and we'd eaten a bit of dinner and Darcy wanted to watch something and I wanted to watch something that wasn't sports. And in my hand, I'd realized I'd spent 20 minutes scrolling through St. Pauli Twitter, the Bundesliga 2 side. They're having a fan issue now where their international supporters groups are literally saying, right, we don't support St. Pauli anymore because of a stance they've taken on Gaza. And I'm just looking at my phone here, reading this stuff, and I'm like, that's enough. That's enough. There is a limit to which the brain can handle all this stuff, and you need to stop. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's enough. Do something else. Watch something else. Go for a walk. Do any of those things. Like, there is a point as a sports fan where it's all consuming. And, you know, I have a daughter now, and she's very cute. Maybe enjoy that. Read a book, go for a walk, go for a pint. Dude, just put your phone down. I think the phone is what swamps it, really. There was a time where you could walk away from the sport once the live game was over on the television. It might occupy parts of your brain, fair enough, but now there's no escape. Everything's still there.
Yeah, and it's just so easy to access. I mean, that's the thing. It's just so easy.
I know, but do you remember the period I went through where I was heavily involved in, like, more my brain was heavily involved in, like, lower league soccer arguments in the United States? Do you remember that? And I they spilled onto the podcast to the point where you had to take me to the side and say, no one cares.
Yeah, and I don't like using those words because I think that it alienates. There are people out there that care about a lot of things, and sometimes what you say no one cares about is one of those things, and it alienates people. But it was the only way I knew how to get through to you in that moment. It was like a verbal slap to the face, and you need it. Sometimes we all need that.
Because every week I was going deeper and deeper into, you know, I mean, it was beyond USL. It was way beyond that. USL looked positively Champions League compared to some of the stuff I was pulling up. So I am glad, I'm thankful for that intervention. Before we get into the meat of this podcast, Andrew, I have one bit of housekeeping. So those of you who purchased merch in the last week, today we'll be we'll start shipping it. So look out, check out for your emails. There's a lady in Australia. She's got some t-shirts coming to her.
Oh my goodness.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So that's cool. Yeah, and they are extremely comfortable. I wear nothing else around the house. Literally nothing.
Just... Really? You Porky Pigot?
Yeah.
Shirt no pants?
Got to be the weirdest look you can muster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Porky Pig or Winnie the Pooh? I don't know. It might be both.
I don't know, but like thankfully with Manscaped and our continued sponsorship with them, I am at least groomed when I'm not wearing any bottoms around the apartment.
Well, good. That's nice. For all the Buffalo Bills fans out there who've had it with football and are taking in this podcast as a removal from the NFL because they just want to ensconce themselves in other things. Welcome. This is a safe space for you. I do want to say, I really, before we get into like the soccer of this weekend,
important.
I think JJ, you can make an argument. Like a lot of fan bases out there think that they're tortured. I know Tottenham fans thrive on that. Everton fans thrive on that ethos.
Cruz Azul fans.
There's a lot of fan bases. I think you can make an argument that the Buffalo Bills are the owners of the three worst losses I think maybe I've ever seen.
Right.
They have the Super Bowl that they lost to the Giants, where they lost on a field goal as time expired. They have the Music City Miracle, where they, to this day, I've never seen a playoff game end like that. It was ridiculous. Right. And the 13 seconds game against the Chiefs a couple years ago.
Oh, jeez.
They might be I mean, look, obviously this is I don't know if those are 1, 2, and 3, but the fact is, if you're having a conversation about the worst losses in NFL history, those three probably do appear somewhere on the list. And for one fan base, and so yesterday the Bills loss doesn't rise to that level, but it's just it's just adding, it's more fuel to this. One day they're going to win. They're going to win a Super Bowl one day. And that city, it's going to look like what Buenos Aires looked like when Argentina won this World Cup. I think Buffalo's going to look like that.
And they're an amazing fan base. They're a fan base that anybody in Europe who is very, very particular about their fan bases, they don't want any plastics or any of that. Buffalo is a place that you can look at and relate to instantly. They are hardcore. They absolutely love their ball. I would say I was rooting so hard for them. Like, they are my team now. Like, since the Giants have just kind of fallen off, like they're not relevant in the postseason. The minute the Giants season is over, I'm clicking in, and I want the Bills to do well. I like Josh Allen a lot. I think that, I mean, the problem is now with his contract, with every year that goes by, he's getting paid more, and it's going to be harder and harder for them to put the weapons around him that he needs. But I don't want to add further doom and gloom. I would like to say defend the kicker, though. He's caught that cleanly. You can argue he should have gone further to the left to carry it over.
Well, that was what they were saying, is that it was known how strong the wind was blowing in that direction.
It should have accounted for it.
I don't know.
It's caught it. It's hit a certain plane of height, and it's literally pulled it. Like Gus did it. It's not the same as the original wide right. I don't think it's as egregious as that. God, yeah.
What a weekend, though. What a weekend. And it was a great weekend of soccer, too. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll go through Premier League stuff, Ivan Toney controversy, like we said, La Liga, Bundesliga, some January transfer stuff, and the U.S. men or U.S. boys. I don't know what you would refer to the January camp that just happened, but I have some thoughts on that.
I saw a few tweets when the lineups were announced. Who are these people?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Which
certainly
is a bit harsh.
I almost want to take that time, JJ, as much to discuss that as I do for a little look down memory lane. Because I wonder if there's a certain age profile of our audience that isn't so well versed in the USA-Slovenia rivalry. So I'll take a quick glance down. Because if you're under 20... which is probably a good chunk of people that listen to us. If you're under 20.
Are we at that point already? Man.
13 years ago?
Oh, come on.
If you're 20 years old now, you were 7. So I'll just do a quick refresher course on what USA and Slovenia means for a lot of us when you see those two teams matched up with one another. The greatest game that never was is kind of what I think of it as. Like JJ said, the store, the Caught Offside store, is fully open. I've noticed it looks like the shirts are flying off the shelves, which we knew would happen. This has been years in the making. So I think we had an unbelievable backlog of people that couldn't wait to do this. And the animals, all of you, not even just everybody, has responded, but keep going.
CaughtOffsidePod.com.
Yep, it's keep easy. Going. And then it is so damn cold out. It has accelerated my interest in getting winter hats out there for the people.
Well, can I just say, I'm going to drop a little tease on Twitter and on Reddit and on our Instagram, because you've come up with a worldly idea. When we were rebranded, we had an expert do it, basically. A guy who's at basically the top of that profession and had worked with big brands before. And he, you know, it isn't just one symbol. We've got breakouts from that symbol. And you kind of picked out part of the symbol. And I think it's going to look absolutely fire on the beanies.
Think so too.
And we need to get them done this week. This week, they have to go up. They have to go up.
Yeah.
They're going to look amazing. And they're cool. There's nothing better than something that's branded that's cool beyond what it is. It's beyond me and you, how cool this will look. And people will be like, what's that symbol mean? And it's going to be the trendiest thing since Carhartt dropped
People might wear them in the summer. I don't even, we might not even have to rush them out. I think it won't even matter what
time.
Well,
listen, you've got plenty of time, because it doesn't feel like it's going to get anyways warm until about 3 weeks after St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. And one final thing, like we've mentioned repeatedly over the last month or so, we are a finalist for the Sports Podcast Awards, Best Football Podcast. We are a minnow in a sea of sharks. So please go support this minnow of a podcast, because we know how much you all care about us. And this is your chance to show it. If we can take down Gary Neville, I mean, JJ. And he's up for like three different awards. There should be a rule.
I mean, how many podcasts does one man want?
Yeah.
But they're all very good. And the thing is, I listen to most of them.
He's great. He's awesome. But it would be fun to win that. Because I like to think of what would Gary Neville's reaction be if he saw that? Like if someone said, oh, but
yes. Andrew Grundling.
I want to picture that scene in my head, that someone is having to tell him that his three podcasts or whatever it is that have been nominated have lost to this show. I just think that would be a fun. I want that scene to occur. I'll never see it, but I want to know that somewhere in the world, someone's telling him that Andrew Grundling and JJ Devaney's podcast have just defeated his two or three that were nominated.
On the last stick to football. Roy Keane told Gary Neville he was doing too much and that his body was breaking down through stress. And that's why he was getting mouth ulcers and he looked tired and he had a rash in his eye. I'd love to think the stress of figuring out how he's been nominated with us two doinks is giving him stress.
Can't help. Let's get into it now, JJ. While it was a limited slate in the Premier League, as it has been for these last couple of weeks, still fun. Still much fun to be had.
Fun, yeah.
Still talking points?
Points. Fun was too much.
We'll start with Liverpool. They go five points clear atop the table as they go down to the south coast of England. And I was going to say they dismantle Bournemouth. Score was probably maybe a little bit unfair to what this game actually was, especially the first half.
It was nearly at halftime, though.
Pretty even in the first half. Not much to really separate both teams. Literally nothing to separate them on the scoreboard where it matters the most. But then Liverpool's class kind of took hold in the second half, and they put it to Bournemouth a little bit. And I would say, I put this on the rundown, and I'll reiterate it now for everyone that, like, if I'm a Liverpool fan, this is not a win that I'm taking lightly or just kind of moving on to the next one. I think this was an important win for them with the sheer number of key players that they're missing. They're on the road against a team that has literally been the informed side of like the last seven or eight games.
Yeah, with the informed striker.
Yeah, who was a former Liverpool player. This is a really good and important win for Liverpool. They're without, I mean, I was looking at, what would you say, three of their five best players between Salah, Trent, Andy Robertson, those guys.
If you want to throw them in.
Sure, yeah, all right. Endo. I mean, like, it's half their starting 11 essentially is gone. And we've been using that as an excuse for other teams this season, Newcastle, Tottenham, and a valid excuse, I think. I mean, if you're missing half of your 11, that's not an excuse. It's a reason for why you might struggle. And with Liverpool are starting Joe Gomez and Connor Bradley at fullback. a team that we've come to think rely heavily on that position for a lot of their attacking play. And they just keep rolling. And other guys just step up in their place. You know, Darwin Nunez scores a couple goals. Diogo Jota, who you've been touting recently, looks just brilliant in this game. Maybe there's a drop-off in some way, but they compensate for it in other ways. And I think if I'm a Liverpool fan, I'm starting to think some things about where this season is heading.
Well, I was thinking some things when I heard Trent Alexander-Arnold was injured. He straight away, you look at the games he's potentially going to miss, and I think Bournemouth, that's a really tough one. Bournemouth away, you know, a team in the past which wasn't as good as their current iteration and still gave Liverpool trouble last season in particular. Liverpool has just found a way to be adaptable, and in a league where everyone else is kind of, I mean, the main title contenders have three losses already. Liverpool only have one, and as a loss, it doesn't really count. Or it shouldn't count.
Oh, easy. Wow.
Well, it shouldn't. A draw, we should be calling that one a draw. Come on. You don't think there's
speechless.
A massive asterisk around that one?
I don't know what to say that you would.
Anyway. I shouldn't take anything away from the Ange good feel-good moment that you're enjoying. No, the first half, Liverpool were... It was slow. It was stodgy. And again, It was Klopp. Klopp's been able to do things at halftime, make in-game changes, and Liverpool are able to kick on and improve their performance. And that's happened a few times this season, which is that's reassuring. I mean,
we're kind of venturing into territory, JJ, that we discuss with Manchester City a little bit. I mean, what do we always say when De Bruyne was hurt, when Haaland was out? We kind of say, yeah, like, in theory, those things suck and those are brutal blows. But with City, does it really matter? Starting to feel that way a little bit about Liverpool.
I think that's because in the past, City had, like, what was it? The substitutions they made in the Champions League semi-final against Real Madrid in the second leg, and were just like, how is this possible? Now, that was last season, City. But you're watching the names come off the bench and you're like, they've got a starting 11 on the bench.
But like with Liverpool, like when everyone's healthy, is Jota starting for Liverpool? Well, maybe now he is because he's played his way into that. But
well, I would, you've heard what I've thought about him. And I do think, like, I would have him starting all the time for Liverpool. I think him and Diaz, Salah are absolutely crucial. And that's not that, like, look at Darwin Nunez again. He hit 10 goals and 10 assists for the season. Mm-hmm. I will still say, even his finish,
the second goal, he
threw his two feet at it and it hit his heel and went in. Like, it's probably a perception thing. We've had such smooth finishers before and now we got this guy. But I mean, he causes teams problems. I hear what you're saying. Are we reaching that level with Liverpool? I would say no, we're not. I don't think that City at their pomp with the bench that they had, that Liverpool are comparable to that. Now, by the same token, you can still call on Cody Gakpo to come in, Gravenberg to come in. But I mean, the rest, like Bobby Clark, Cade Gordon, Owen Beck, you know, Liverpool were stretched. And those injuries that we have are still significant. It's I expected the second half to be tougher, and I expected something of a kind of a smash and grab. But by the end of the game, it was really, really comfortable, and Liverpool in possession. There was a couple of times, you know, where you're like, what are Bournemouth doing in terms of defending? Where you saw large gaps open up, and Liverpool's midfielders were able to hit balls into those gaps. Jota springs to mind in particular, but. The finishes were good. The Darwin Nunez first goal was just a lovely move.
It's a great goal.
Beautiful goal.
Curtis Jones is really becoming a nice player.
Yeah, but Curtis Jones was a guy who was out of favor for a bit. And a lot of people,
I know, that's why I'm saying becoming.
Yeah. And
he wasn't viewed as that before.
Yeah. And I actually thought it was unfair when Klopp stopped turning to him there earlier in the season. But now he's back in and he's been fantastic. Like a really, really good win away on the road. I'm reading all these articles though, Andrew, and I don't know if you feel the same way. and maybe this is in the conversation for now, but every article talks about how good Liverpool are in this moment, and then it's kind of finished with the sentence in some format, however, City probably most likeliest winners this season. That's still, even though Liverpool are 5 points clear, I know City have a game in hand and all that, there still seems to be that feeling that it's...
Well, you feel that way too.
Yeah, I know.
You've said that, so...
It's hard to shake it. It's really hard to shake it. And again, that might be just like muscle memory. Repeated close run Premier League title races where City inevitably win has conditioned us to all probably to feel a bit this way. But really good win for Liverpool. I'm not gonna go crazy about it. Although there is something really nice when you see Liverpool traveling south, and at the end of the game, there's a kind of the away fans are singing, and Klopp comes over and applauds them. When you see that at this point in the season, you do get that little tingling sensation.
I know I did.
I very much doubt that, but I'm getting that excited feeling. I should also mention at this juncture, I will be there in Anfield on the final day of the season.
What? Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
This is news to me.
Wolves at home. Could there be a title?
When did this come together?
2 weeks ago.
We were friends. You didn't even tell me.
I put my name in with the supporters club. They had tickets available for three forthcoming games, and I said, you know what, I'll just see if I get drawn, and I didn't think anything of it. I just signed up for the Wolves game, and I have tickets for that.
Oh wow, unbelievable!
Yeah. So we'll be live potting, we'll from England on the final day of the season. We could do a Super Sunday, our own Super Sunday.
Wow, this is huge! This is huge. JJ, I wanted to, it probably takes a Liverpool supporter to give a thought on this more than someone like myself, but Jamie Carragher made an interesting comment about Diogo Jota. He said, I think some of the strikers I played alongside, Michael Owen, Luis Suarez, Fernando Torres, Robbie Fowler, I think Jota is the best finisher.
Ooh.
Now Jota does have Liverpool's best shot conversion rate in the Premier League era at 19.3%. Sadio Mane is next at 18.6%. And Fernando Torres is third at 17.9%.
I think,
and I would say the quality of some of his, I mean, it feels like every goal that Jota scores is from a difficult angle. So I can see a little bit maybe what Carragher's talking about.
Yeah. But even when he's one-on-one, you're like, he's going to score. You know, remember against Tottenham, of course you remember against Tottenham last season, late on.
Yeah, yeah.
The winner.
The one that he was gifted when Lucas Moura just passed the ball to him, that one?
Wasn't it? He still had to put it away, and he put it away well. You know that feeling you get where
big asterisk on that game, I think, for Lucas Moura's actions. I don't know.
No, he is one of those. I mean, Carragher does qualify that the best footballer of all of those was obviously all-around footballer was Suarez.
Well, he says finisher. He's not saying footballer.
Finisher.
He's very specific.
I think Jota... tough. Fowler was very, very clinical too. But God.
Well, think about it. I see. Oh my God. You all can't see this. He's sweating right now thinking.
Michael, again, we have to break it down. Michael Owen was I'm just going to pick Owen narrowly over Jota.
You don't often get this stressed answering a question or thinking.
It's such
about
a good
something.
Question. You look stressful. It's such a good question.
Yeah,
and he will not come close to the volume of bloody amazing goals that Suarez scored.
Yeah,
I would like to add a name.
Okay,
but Daniel Sturridge. Had he been able to continue and not be interrupted by injuries, is the best English finisher I've seen in like 30 years outside of probably, you know, your Canes and your Shearers.
So, before people, I don't know if some, and if anyone's going to laugh at that, I don't know. But before anyone,
they
does,
can. I don't care. I don't care.
Well, I should say this: Sturridge was fifth among Liverpool for shot conversion rate.
He is
in the conversation. If you're going off of that statistic,
Andrew, the range of finishes he had was just truly unbelievable. Dink the keeper, lob the keeper, go around the keeper, side foot, power, everything. Yeah, he had the absolute whole package, and he was just absolutely cursed with injuries. And he, for my money, like, he's a far superior finisher than Jermaine Defoe. Again, Kane much more consistent and durable. So I'm not gonna say he was better than Kane. And we just didn't have enough of him. He was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Before we move off of this, I do want to mention, I thought Justin Kluivert should have gotten a red.
I think so too. Yeah, but I thought that was naughty.
Yeah. Dale Johnson said Kluivert's tackle wasn't with a straight leg. This indicates more force and is comparable to that of Chelsea's Malo Gusto last weekend, who made a very similar contact on Fulham midfielder Willian. Gusto was booked, but there was no VAR upgrade to red. I don't know. Okay. It's a fine line, I guess. But I saw it when in real time, didn't think anything of it. Saw the replay, thought, oh, he's gone. But no, apparently not. So I don't know. Let's see. Before we move on, JJ, I do want to mention one thing that is somewhat Liverpool related.
Oh,
I want to give credit to one of the animals out there. Avenged Chelsea FC on Reddit.
Oh, this dope.
He went right into the hornet's nest, knowing full well how many Liverpool underpants wearers there are that listen to this show. And he basically said that their 2021 title was BS and the title that they're going to win this year is also BS. Now, look, I'm not here to judge the take. I'm just here to say that it was courageous. And I think I'd like to start a new segment on this show. The
courageous animals.
The Avenged Chelsea FC courageous take of the week. He didn't really have much to back it up. But he went in with full force. It wasn't a reply to some other thread. He started a thread on the Reddit page with that take and just got destroyed for it. But it's his courage that matters, not necessarily the content of the take. Good for you, Avenged Chelsea FC.
Yeah, he's the guy at the bottom of the mountain with the avalanche coming towards him that he started by screaming. And he's popping a can of beer and he's just like, if I'm going out, I'm going out absolutely getting smothered.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a terrible, terrible point. Like if he really, I mean, just thoughtless, brainless. But then he admits, I think, further down in the thread that I just hate Liverpool so much that I just
That wasn't evident from the initial.
No, he put that in. Yeah, it was such a dim take that actually the only correct way to respond to it was not to respond to it.
He got a response. He got quite a response.
He sure did, yeah.
So I applaud your courage, and I encourage more of these dim takes, as JJ puts it. I just read it and thought it was so funny because I know how many Liverpool fans listen to this show, and he went right for the jugular. It was hilarious. Mm. Let's see. We continue now. JJ, Arsenal, maybe a little mojo back. A nice 5-0 pounding. Of floundering Crystal Palace, who's
such a weird, weird
fans,
one.
Kind of protested their club at the end of this one with a long message in banner form. It's like three lines of banners held up.
Very wordy. Was it the Newcastle supporters a few years ago started the wordy banner? Let's have a read of what this one was. Wasted potential on and off the pitch. Weak decisions taking us backwards. It's not snappy.
A lot of words. They didn't fly that over the stadium in an airplane for a reason. Like, you got to pay per letter on those things.
And you can't really sing it. Wasted potential on and off of the pitch. Weak decisions taking us backward. Maybe you can't.
They made their point.
It was very interesting because for like someone like for Parrish, because has Steve Parrish been protested before? I would have thought.
I remember.
Oh, here was the other one. Oh, no, this one's more troubling. No shared vision, no structured plan. Parrish out, Yanks out.
Of course, it's always, it's always fall in some
well.
Way.
There's so many Americans involved in Premier League football right now that, like, to say Yanks out, you could. Everyone's like, "Are you speaking to me?" Yeah. I mean, they were bad, but they weren't that bad.
I wish I could have seen more of them this season with both Eze and Olise healthy at the same time. They're two of the most exciting. I mean, really, like they are two of the most exciting players in the league, and they've so rarely have been healthy together.
Did I ever? I mean, this is me just injecting myself into something. But Steve Parrish did a question Q&A on Twitter once, and I said, "Do you and Simon Jordan go to the same barbers?" And he responded with a laugh emoji.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
On the Arsenal side of this, JJ.
No. That's not right. Come on. So if you look at it, the performances, the results haven't been great. There's the kind of sense that they are slipping and slipping towards kind of relegation. And that the supporters are. I thought it was a mistake. Like Hodgson coming back in and doing what he did wasn't a mistake, but having him stay on was. And now I think my prediction is going to come through from about a month ago where I said he'd be the first one gone. He will be gone. He'd be gone in some format, either moved upstairs, but he will be relieved of his duties. They currently sit in 15th on 21 points, five clear of Luton Town in 16th. I mean.
No. One clear of Nottingham Forest in 16th, five clear of Luton, who are 18th.
What are you on about? No, sorry, Luton, who are 18th, excuse me.
Yeah.
But
it should be noted that Nottingham Forest could be receiving a points deduction any day now. So Crystal Palace, and I guess Everton could receive another one. So the Palace's place in the Premier League could remain solid, but that doesn't make what's going on there any better this season.
And I wonder if it's kind of a club that's reached a point where, like, how far can we actually, like, staying in the Premier League is not enough for their supporters. They want to be pushing forward.
Well, I mean, they see teams like, you know, look, 5 years ago or six, whatever, like, was there a big difference between Palace and West Ham? Or, like, look where Brighton is now.
No.
Villa were in the Championship. And look at where they are now.
They hate Brighton. And so maybe they look down the road at Brighton and they think they're looking at them with envious eyes. Why can't we be run like this? But like Brighton are an exception in many ways. Hodgson, for me, I don't blame him, but for his own reputation, he should never have gone back in there now. But to see those protests, I think it's this mixture of like just what the Premier League is for a lot of clubs, this kind of nether zone we talk about between like 17th and what would you say, 10th or 11th, that kind of mush, and fans' expectations not meeting the realities of football. Like, where can they actually go? It's so crowded now at the top, especially with Villa joining the pack up there. It's crowded and it's difficult. I would love to hear from, we have got some Crystal Palace supporting fans, listeners, and I would love to hear from them, just tell us what they think about what's going on. Because you're right, I kind of would have looked at them at the start of the season, thought a lot of nice young players. Mm-hmm. They'll be good or they'll be interesting, and they just haven't been.
And the problem is, I think the writing is on the wall, just with the order of things in Premier League football, where they know they're probably not going to be able to keep these guys, Eze, Olise, for much longer, and so there might be a feeling of like, we had these two incredible talents, and we've kind of squandered this little mini era that we could have had. I can see that being frustrating.
Yeah, but honestly, going into this weekend, I did not expect to see banners. I did not expect to see protests directly aimed at the owners. I did not have them marked as a crisis club. So shows what I know.
Yeah. On the Arsenal side of things, Statman Dave pointing out Arsenal have now scored 13 goals from set pieces this season. That's more than any other side in the Premier League. And Ashley
Chris
Williams
Richards now had a nightmare.
Well, yeah, especially on that first goal. I mean, He's gonna learn, and this is part of the learning process. But I mean, Gabriel just totally with like one move, like it wasn't like there was no pick really set up. Like it was just like Gabriel, who's not the fastest guy on the field, he kind of just like jukes him, and he's gone. Like that's it. And Richards recovers a little, but at that point it's too late, and Gabriel rises right over him for an easy header. And look, he's very good, Gabriel. Got another one later on a corner. So he'll do that to guys, but it wasn't a great look for Chris Richards, and he's just going to learn. I'm not saying he shut off, but you can't turn your head. You can't allow to be lost like that on a set piece. Wasn't great. I saw something interesting, JJ, on Match of the Day, Ashley Williams. So he presented this theory about Martin Odegaard delivering set pieces and strategy that he's relaying to his teammates based on something that he's doing with his socks before the set piece that is signaling, I guess, if it's going to go near post or far post. Now, they don't know if it's true, but I'll say this. I don't know if it is true or if it's not, but he should be doing that. Everyone should do something like that. It's like, to me, it's like a third base coach sending signals to a base runner.
Yeah.
Like, why not make it clear to everybody through some discrete signal as to where you're putting this?
So, I mean, they do. I mean, a lot of them, that's been fairly common. One hand goes up, both hands go up, yeah. You know, to indicate what kind of a ball is going in. Like, that's been happening for years.
Yeah.
I
guess they're just trying to find a more fun way to do it. I don't know.
I guess so. I wasn't that impressed with Arsenal. That's the thing. And I don't think...
It's a nice thing to say in a game where they won 5-0.
Right, exactly. See, the two set-piece goals, you had the really clever one from Raya, I think it was the Trossard goal, where he gets the ball moving really quickly in the counter-attack. And then you have two in garbage time. And it's not like the Arsenal didn't deserve to win. I wouldn't argue that. But it was just their open play, their general kind of breaking down the teams, it's still not there. And it's not just me. You if you read Arsblog's report, he spoke at the end. Arsblog basically said, look, we've had some miserable results. We've won 5-0. I'm not going to harp too much on the negatives or the issues that were still visible today. I'm paraphrasing. And then you had one of the guys, his last name Suter, who writes at Football 365, and he kind of pointed out how he didn't know what to make of that 5-0. You know, it's just, we have to be guard against, all right, Arsenal, you know, like you said, mojo back. I'm not sure. I'm still not sure about them.
Okay, fair
but
enough.
It's a 5-0 win, so it's good. Like, it's a good win. I don't. It's difficult, but like, I still watch them. I think, God, they're making such hard work of these teams. Teams now, that sit in have they have a real chance against Arsenal. They really struggle. And another piece I read was the wrong Gabriel scoring. Like,
well, they both scored.
Yeah,
I mean, Gabriel Martinelli came on, scored twice.
Yeah, but there's a Jesus that needs to do it a couple of goals.
There's another Gabriel. You're right.
Yeah,
that's true. I suppose
again, you sit here, and we're going to get crushed by Arsenal fans now for even suggesting that a 5-0.
Well, not
it
we
could be negatively analyzed, but I did see a lot of that. Yeah,
all right. But it is 5-0, important win for Arsenal, and I guess helping out their goal difference a little bit as well with the two late ones they got from Martinelli. Let's see. One other Premier League note I wanted to mention, JJ, Ivan Toney made his return to football as Brentford beat Nottingham Forest 3-2.
Why? Yeah, it was.
Let's not dance around this.
Well, hang on. Before we get to that, you know, the controversy within his comeback. There seemed to be like a huge groundswell of positivity about this comeback, as if he'd beaten some great odds, or that something had been inflicted upon him, some injustice, and he was bouncing back. Because I think it was Jamie Carragher said, well, I was always going to give the man of the match to Ivan Toney anyways. Why?
Like, yeah,
Ivan Toney broke what I would say since certainly in American sports was it which was the World Series that was fixed 1912 was it
the Black Sox scandal
yeah
Shoeless Joe was it 1919 I feel like I should know this
yeah
I want to like say 1919 but yeah anyway
yeah but the point being that in sports like what we see we have to absolutely believe is kosher and is legit. What's happening on the field in front of us is real. and that anything, particularly gambling, by a player who plays in that profession, cannot be allowed. Just to even give the sense that there may be some impropriety.
It's a weird thing to run afoul of and get a hero's welcome in your return.
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. And listen, I know we'll get emails and texts. Well, what about the larger, that football is awash in gambling advertising and
sure.
And all. Sure. That doesn't change the responsibility of the players to not do that.
Right. That probably is why people have taken his side, because they think that there's some inherent hypocrisy here with sports in general being so embedded with gambling in this day and age. It's just, I mean, you can't turn on a sporting event without seeing 10 commercials for them. So I see that, but like, that doesn't change the fact that it's a rule. There's no secrecy around it. And I don't know. I mean, it's pretty clear cut.
It is clear cut to me. Now this comeback, this goal from Ivan Toney prompted Peter Drury. I guess he was caught up in the mood of the moment, because this is something quite spectacular from Peter Drury on comms.
Ivan Toney, that's show business! The comeback kid has sprinkled his magic dust at once! Totemic Tony on target on the first day of the rest of his life.
That felt weird.
Over the top?
Way over the top. Totemic Tony, which is, I mean, it's the second week of this kind of alliteration where he had Gorgeous Gordon for Anthony Gordon the week before. But it's sprinkling magic dust and what was it? What was the final line there? The first day of the rest of his life. Drury really does. We've had him on the pod. He was perfectly lovely. We've enjoyed his commentary for years. There's a sense that he's now just like become self-aware. And he leans hard into some of this stuff.
I thought there are some comments that I thought were interesting from Graham Lasso afterwards. They weren't in that clip, but if you were watching the broadcast, he says he's on it quickly. Now, eventually, like the NBC cameras, they show what Tony did. But before that, Graham Lasso was curious about how that goal could have happened. And he says, before you see the replays of Tony moving the ball, he says, I got to be honest. He's like, that's a great finish and all, but I got to be honest, I'm a little puzzled by the placement of that wall. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Right. There's a reason for this. So obviously everybody's seen it by now. Ivan Toney, he picks up the ball and moves it a little, which is kind of like, okay, I don't know if you should do that, but everyone kind of does that. But then it's a bold double down as he moves the ball again, and with it takes some of the referee line spray. I didn't realize you could do this, but picks it up and creates almost a new line so as to fool anyone who may have thought they caught him in the act, and he could point and say, no, look, here's the line. Now, in the end, no one caught him in the act, which is mind-boggling to me that no one on Forrest, no referee, no one saw him do this.
But crucially, no one in the Forrest wall or Matt Turner made an adjustment to what he'd done.
Yeah. Alexi Lalas posted, he said, sneaky, but ref, wall, and goalkeeper should notice and react.
Of course.
Which I think that's kind of it. I think everyone should probably agree with that.
Forrest writing a letter to the PGMOL after Liverpool's letter and Arsenal's letter this season is just embarrassing stuff. First of all, balls being moved around on free kicks, referees turning their back and a player grabbing a yard or a half yard, adjusting, it happens all the time.
I think it's because he took the spray that makes
the,
us
the
feel...
The foam element is what has really got people.
Like, I don't know where the line is. I use that, no pun intended. I don't know what the line is for like gamesmanship or cheating, but the fact that he did that kind of pushes it a little to one side for me. Now, Craig Burley said this. He said, so Ivan Toney moved the ball. We've all done it, but it's 2024, and a lot of folks have sod all else to be offended about. So Craig has no issue with this whatsoever. Ultimately, I've been trying to decide. I mostly feel the way Craig does. This is not the end of the world, and it is hardly the game's worst offense, not by a long shot. The only reason for, like, going back to what you said at the beginning, it's just a little bit of a weird look to me that this was his first game back after serving an 8-month suspension for a major rules violation. Like, to do what could be perceived as cheating after just coming back from what is kind of not cheating. It's not, he wasn't suspended for cheating, but like something nefarious. It's just a weird look. Like, remember, JJ, when I'm thinking about like Alex Rodriguez, like, remember, I don't know if you'll remember when he did, he was playing for the Yankees. They were playing the Blue Jays and he was rounding. He was getting to third base on a pop-up and he shouted, "Ha, it's mine." As he got to the third baseman,
of course he did.
Howie Clark, and Clark let the ball drop thinking that it was John McDonald, the Blue Jays shortstop, who was coming up to get it. And people were furious about it. Now imagine if Alex Rodriguez had done that very same thing in his first game back from his PED suspension. I think the world would have exploded. I mean, I honestly remember, like, people would have lost their minds over it. And I think the benefit of the doubt that Toney gets that A-Rod doesn't is that what you referenced at the start of this, the way Toney coming back from this was being received, people like him.
Yeah.
I think that's it here. Likeability has the power to completely shade the way people want to view these things. People like Ivan Toney, people couldn't stand Alex Rodriguez. And I think it's, honestly, I think it's as simple as that.
And A-Rod's rap sheet was long and dense.
Sure.
You know, like, so I do think that has a lot to do with it. I think everyone had decided that Toney was hard done by, and that was it. That was the consensus as well. And I honestly think the media reaction was coming from the fans rather than the other way around. I don't think the media were driving this. I think the sense in the groundswell of a guy who had been hard done by and who was making his comeback was transmitted from supporters. That mood was transmitted from supporters to media, and the media reacted, Peter Drury, Jamie Carragher, feeding off that vibe. There was some things about Toney, though, like, you know, during this game, like, he does feel like a dying breed center forward. Like, he's so physical. There was one ball where he put Mope in, and it's just basically, you can see how Brentford can be really, really clinical with him. Andrew, it's just a clip ball. You know, it's a nothing. It's not like it's intricate passing or anything. It's just a ball dinked into him and he redirects it. And the on-rushing Neil Mope. Maybe you want someone better than Neil Mope rushing onto it. But nevertheless, you get what he can do. And you get why possibly the excited talk about him going to Arsenal. Like, he would give Arsenal definitely a different dimension. But he would totally change the way their attack would function. Mm-hmm. Oh, that said, though. See, a lot of clip balls into the far post, a lot of crosses for Arsenal. I wonder if he couldn't do a job till the end of the season. But I think the price is not going to work. I think he's going to leave Brentford in the summer, but the price right now is not going to work for anyone, really. The Brentford have slapped, what, 100 million on him? You're not paying that for a 28-year-old.
Jeez. No, that's, he's, yeah, that, I don't think they're not getting that for Ivan Toney. He's a good player, but yeah. You have anything else on this? I know you had also mentioned, was there anything you wanted to say about, what was it, Sheffield United, West Ham?
Oh, yeah. So it's one of those games where we've long kind of struggled with, from a distance, the West Ham perception, the West Ham supporters' perception of Moyes. Not all West Ham supporters, but a significant rump of them who have kind of wanted him gone, even in the Europa Conference League win last season. And this is the game that this will be Exhibit A for the prosecution. You know, the players that they had on the field, I know they were missing some quality. Like, West Ham were missing, like, Paqueta and a couple of guys. You know, some really quality players. But they had more than enough to win this game. They were leading in this game. And they contrived to find a way to lose it. Areola coming out and punching who is it? What, McBurnie, cleaning McBurnie out of it, and that's the penalty. And you should have seen Moyes just like crestfallen. And then there was the right at the end, then the ball goes in and it's a struggle between the Sheffield United defender and Jarrod Bowen, and Bowen clearly says he's clearly feels he's been pulled over. But if you're watching it on closer inspection, they're both grappling with each other, and if anything, Jarrod Bowen kind of pulls him to the ground too. But it just, this game had everything. How Sheffield United looked sunk when they brought on substitute Rian Brewster and he got sent off for a terrible tackle. Like, it was really dreadful tackle, straight red, off. And you're like, how are they getting back into this? But they found a way. But in that last 10 minutes where West Ham should be getting the 3 points against the worst team in the league, and they don't, they just draw. That sums up kind of the ongoing frustration with Moyes. There is a sense that if we had anybody else, we would be putting the teams like this away. Like, it wouldn't be a question. And I know they're in a good position in the league, relatively speaking, and I know they've had a good run lately, but it's that kind of result that really brings together what West Ham fans have in terms of a problem with David Moyes.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I know there was a lot of outrage over Bowen not winning a penalty there. It seemed like pretty much everyone felt it was.
I felt it at the time, but then the Sheffield United defender, hold on, give me 1 second there, Andrew. But I think the Sheffield United defender tweeted after the game, which it felt weird to have the defender just come out on social media and deliberately kind of address the issue. Ahmedozovic, but I think he tweeted out that he said, no, I was literally, I was being pulled down myself by Bowen.
I don't know. I saw Mark Clattenburg said afterward, VAR got Sheffield United's late penalty against West Ham very wrong, and it's astounding how Jarrod Bowen wasn't given a spot kick for the Hammers. And Ollie McBurnie now becomes the answer to a trivia question. That is the latest goal ever scored in the Premier League.
Really?
The 13th minute of, yeah, I mean, how often are we in the 103rd minute until this year? How, like, would that ever happen? So maybe that'll get broken next week with the way stoppage time is now working. But yeah, for the time being, he is the latest goal scorer the Premier League has ever seen. So
yeah, I'm watching there's a still. There's a still of Ahmedozovic and Bowen. It's hard not to think that it's a penalty.
Yeah, it looks like one.
He tweeted, clearly biased. You can see at he called it clearly biased, and that it was somehow edited. So
do we think that's true? I don't know.
Yeah, I would have given a penalty there. It would have been clearly biased. You can see at the unedited footage where he pulls me down with him, and which makes me lose sight of the ball. Obviously, it's been edited to make it look like a pen to West Ham. Not buying it. Yeah. Anyway, but it was tremendous fun. End of the game, like real, real chaotic stuff. And it gives, it gives Sheffield United like a little glimmer of hope that they might do something, but they won't. They're going down.
Well, again, their potential points deduction still to be handed out. So
yeah,
it's all still very much up in the air, and who knows what some of these points will mean at the end of the season. JJ, we'll take a break in just a sec, but before that, I want to remind everybody that it's amazing. The holidays and New Year's, it all feels like it just ended, and already we're pretty much at Valentine's Day, JJ. Valentine's Day is knocking. That's right. And Manscaped is the remedy for what the love doctor has ordered. His prescription, the all-new Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, designed to elevate your grooming game and shine like the heartthrob you are. Join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com to snag 20% off and free shipping with the code CAUGHTOFFSIDE. JJ, red, of course, the official color of Valentine's Day, but you know where you don't want to see red? Well, I guess from the referee in a soccer game, but also in the shower when
when
blood is happening because you've decided to use scissors.
But also you
pre-Valentine's Day cleanup.
But you don't want to, like, you're getting intimate and it's that moment where the big reveal, not the big reveal, but part of a series of reveals. And it's red down there. It's cut or shorn too close that it gets those red bumps, so it looks like an irritation. That's a disaster.
Yeah, and I know a lot of men don't want to admit this, but we all know that it happens. Some of us know from personal experience. No names need to be mentioned. But let's talk about the real hero of Valentine's Day, and that's the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, because all this can be a distant memory and never needs to happen again. This electric trimmer features skin-safe technology, guarding your Valentine's Day treasure against any grooming mishaps. Also comes with the brightest LED spotlight yet, which I've said before, you wouldn't think much of until you're actually using it and you realize, wow, this is actually extremely helpful. Also, it's waterproof, so these shower shaves are now a breeze. The whole package here also features the Weed Whacker 2.0 nose hair trimmer, Manscaped's liquid formulations, and two free goodies as well. The Shed travel bag and the Boxers 2.0. So it's got all this. And for all of our bearded listeners out there, you and I are with beards as well. Manscaped brings you the Beard Hedger Pro Kit, designed to shave your scruff effortlessly, sculpts cheek lines, maintains beard styles, giving you that suave look for your romantic moments. So get 20% off and free shipping with code CAUGHTOFFSIDE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code CAUGHTOFFSIDE because your grooming upgrade awaits, ready to charm your Valentine's dates. JJ, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. We got a little Bundesliga, La Liga, U.S. men's national team, January transfer. Still, considering how deep we are into the pod, I'm actually stunned to say there's still a lot to do here on Caught Offside. So don't go anywhere. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, I last week mentioned the FIFA Best Awards. I know how locked in you are, how much you value these things. So I thought it only made sense for me to revisit this again because there have been new developments, JJ.
Oh.
Ronaldo, I guess seeing all of these awards head Messi's way. He can't take it anymore. He's had it. And so I saw this. Fabrizio Romano tweeted, Ronaldo said this, Ballon d'Or and the FIFA Best are losing credibility. He goes on to say, it's not to say that Messi didn't deserve it or Haaland or even Mbappe, but the numbers are there and the numbers don't deceive. You have to consider the entire season. The numbers are facts. I assume what he means by the numbers are he led everyone in goal scoring last season. I don't know if he's implying that he should have won the Ballon d'Or or the FIFA Best. Now, look, we said it was strange that Messi won the FIFA Best. The Ballon d'Or, I don't know that I would have voted for Messi, but it's not crazy to think that the best player at the World Cup would win that award in that year. But the one thing I think we both agreed is that Ronaldo didn't really do... I don't know. Do I need to say it? I wasn't thinking Ronaldo was robbed.
I mean, the only one who thinks Ronaldo was robbed is Speed. He was devastated by that.
But there was more, though. You can tell this whole Messi winning this World Cup, I think, has messed up Ronaldo in some way. Because I think it pushed so many people to the Messi side of the argument. And I know, look, Ronaldo's a legend, and it's a valid, you can have a valid conversation about who's the greatest between those two. But the World Cup was huge. And so I think Ronaldo is now looking for these moments to try to get people back on his side. So he said that about the Ballon d'Or and FIFA Best losing credibility. And then he was speaking at the Globe Soccer Awards in Dubai. And he was asked where the level of the Saudi top tier is. And Ronaldo responded on stage by saying, to be honest, I think the Saudi league is not worse than the French league, in my opinion. In the French league, I think you have
some laughter in there, please.
I think you have two, three teams with a good level. In Saudi, now I think it's more competitive. They can say whatever they want. It's just my opinion. And I played there 1 year, so I know what I'm talking about. But I think right now we are better than the French league and we still improve.
Everything I do is amazing. And you should value me more and keep continuing to value me, even though I am clearly finished.
Again, doesn't seem like maybe a not so subtle dig at Messi's time with PSG is kind of how I read into that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We are better than the French league. His retirement is, his life's going to be pretty tricky. It's going to be difficult. I mean, he's going to have to create awards within his house, you know?
But I don't know. I wonder when this retirement...
He's going to have his kids presenting him awards, you know?
I think we're still years away from this. I mean, say what you want about where he's playing, but he did score, what was it, 54 goals in total last season, something like that.
Like, it's a terrible league.
But he doesn't
wants to leave.
But that, and again, that may all very well be true. But if we're talking about an impending retirement, I think that, like,
no, and it's,
he can stay there for a long time and probably still put up numbers. I mean, saw it, like, him, and he looks like he looks like he's 30. Like, he has not, physically, he has not changed in any way. He looks incredible. And it was Ronaldo and Tom Brady, right? Wasn't it that conversation that, like, pushed Brady to come out of retirement for that last season?
Oh,
the Ronaldo. I mean, so I don't think you're going to see whatever this retirement talk is. I'd put it to the, I'd put it on the shelf.
He's in semi-retirement.
Well, I mean, that's, he's
in semi-retirement. That's the facts of it. And again, I'll say this: Roberto Martinez has the toughest job in football now, having to bring this guy because he has no choice. He'll have to travel in the summer to the European Championships.
Which, again, you and I differ a little bit on this. I still believe that if Ronaldo is willing to accept a reduced role, then that could be a real benefit. I still do think that.
And we know his acceptance of reduced roles has been,
well, we'll
has
see,
always been very, very good.
We'll see. Time will tell. Time will tell. It's interesting because the French league part, I knew you would kind of scoff at, but this was an interesting, the reason I put this out there with you is that I thought this would be an interesting test case because you've always kind of been anti-Ronaldo and you've always been anti-awards. And so I thought
anti-Ronaldo.
You've always been, come on. That's not far-fetched for me to say. I think you've always had a kind of negative bent on Ronaldo.
No, the bent, Andrew, I've had is that I always found him to be an incredibly weird preening figure, which we've made fun of together on this podcast for years.
Don't drag me into this. I'm a long-time admirer.
Even when he was brilliant, we found him to be just an oddball and like a creep. But like, the issue with him is when he's been in real decline, how we've all had to just kind of clap along because there's like these hundreds of thousands of bots that will attack us if we don't, you know, talk about the fact that he has been absolute poison for any team he's played for pretty much since his last, maybe second to last season in Juventus, and how he's like a commodity that like a top football team just cannot afford. That's what we've talked about.
But the test here, you've basically come to the defense of awards over Ronaldo. It goes to show where on the JJ pyramid of disdain, it goes to show where he lies. And awards, this is a big win for awards.
Oh,
they're
no,
really celebrating at the Ballon d'Or committee right now.
That whole segment, just I'm total contempt for what we've just talked about for the last 10 minutes. I'm more excited about what we're about to talk about, to be honest.
That's right. The Usman January camp.
Hey.
If JJ is excited to talk about the January camp for the U.S. men's national team, then you know how much contempt he just had for talking awards and Ronaldo.
I think that's that. Well, that's a little bit disrespectful now. A little bit disrespectful.
Really? To who? The U.S. men's national team January camp?
Yeah, and to me. And to me as well.
Well, you're going to be waiting a long time if you're expecting an apology. JJ, I referenced at the start of the show.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Do you think you should get full caps for these games?
See,
these January camp games? When both sides probably don't have their full, like, you know, they're in the middle of, they're not even in an international break.
Right.
They're
no one has to release, all the European clubs are not releasing players. I mean, look, ESPN wrote 11 Americans made their first national team appearances, the most in a match in 36 years. 13 Slovenians also made their debuts. You had 24 guys in this game earning a first cap. So, yeah, I mean, you know, to that extent, you're right. Now, I'm not going to reduce it to the level and say that they shouldn't receive a full cap for this. I'm not.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure.
That seems rude and condescending and to those who played in this game, and I won't have it. But look, in terms of, and in fairness, I don't see anyone really getting outraged about this. Like, if you're looking for a lot to take away from this, look elsewhere, try again. The U.S. were okay, Slovenia were fine. Like, what is all this? This is essentially, in another year, this January camp is maybe a way for Berhalter to find guys that could break into, like, who could maybe get onto the bench of, like, the U.S. Nations League first team, like something like that. But in this year, it's not even that. Like, this January camp was like, who can maybe get onto the bench of the Olympic team? Like, I think that's really, so we're really going deep into the pile here of prospects. This is, you know, even by January camp standards, this one I think meant even a little bit less.
I think for us, we can attach some meaning to it. We thought Patrick Schultz was brilliant in the postseason for Columbus Crew. We had him on the podcast, and there'll always be the kind of push towards the goalkeeper playing or regularly in Europe, and I don't think he's dislodging Matt Turner or anything. But at 22, if he continues his progression, maybe he gets a move to Europe. Maybe we are looking at down the line a replacement or someone to challenge for that number one spot. I also think, again, kind of a personal, not issue, but Jack McGlynn is capped now for the US. Now, he's not cap tied. That doesn't mean he can't reconsider things, but, you know, he's a dual international. And the fact that he has played in this game, been brought into this camp, I think it's significant. Maybe there's a world in which he doesn't see a progression with the U.S. men's national team, that there are too many faces ahead of him, or it's too crowded a competition field. But, you know, he's a talented young player. He's one that the Football Association of Ireland have, we believe they have spoken to. And it, I think it's significant that he's played for the US for a full. That's why I kind of asked, should we really be given full caps for these? You know.
Oh, I see. Ulterior motives.
Yeah, but he has his cap now, and I'd be curious. I'd be curious to see how this develops. I mean, if he goes to Europe, that could change the dynamic as well for him. He may decide that. He may be more front and center, and then he may become a kind of more established part of the senior international squad. But I just thought that was interesting. Other than that,
I mean, I thought there were a couple nice moments for Diego Luna, who's such an interesting player and can be so electric at times. So keep an eye on that. I thought, off the bench, Esmir Bayraktarevic came on. He was really dangerous for the U.S. in that second half. Your guy, John Tolkien, nearly scored an awesome goal. With the outside of his boot, and then probably should have scored a more conventional one after that. So this was not a great day for the U.S. obviously, but there is a world where, maybe they could have scored one or two in this game. Their finishing just wasn't there. Build up play was so again, these are things that I kind of would have expected with not necessarily the most talented crop of players trying to play a system that maybe they're not used to. And by the way, maybe they're not even suited for. I saw Jesse Marsh talking about that, where he was critical a little bit of Berhalter, maybe trying to force a team to play a way that maybe they're not well suited to play. I don't have a huge issue with that. I think if Berhalter, for better or worse, if a manager has a style of play, you have to try to get guys indoctrinated into that system. And so I think he was willing to take a loss in this game if it means starting to introduce some of these guys to the way that he wants to do things. So, that's fine. I don't have a big problem with that. Ultimately, look, with a January camp like this and with this group of players, here's the thing, is like, they're going to keep running into this same issue where, like, this is an exaggeration a little bit, but you're going to kind of get like almost like a lost generation of players, because like, if you're a U.S. men's national team guy who's between the ages of 20 to 23, let's say, kind of screwed. And now I'm not like, I know injuries will happen, form will change, things like that. But like, the U.S. pretty much knows what their team is, and there's not much breaking through that. And unfortunately, for guys who are between the ages of 20 and 23, the U.S. team right now is really, really young.
Yeah.
Pulisic and McKinney are 25. They're the vets. Adams is only 24. Way is 23. Dest is 23. Balogun's 22. Reyna's 21. Pepe's 21. Musa is 21. Like, if you're one of these other guys who isn't those guys and you're of their same age, what are you doing? Like, again, like, You mentioned McGlynn. I really like him. And I you know, there are guys who are going to have a chance, like Brendan Aaronson. He proved that he's good enough where he can possibly break through and be a key player in certain instances for the U.S. But, you know, those guys are going to be so few and far between for the next 8 years or so. So it's I don't know what we're supposed to do with these camps. We can sit here and pretend that they're really important. And like, if they get a couple Olympic contributors out of it, maybe that will be important. I'd like to see the Olympic team succeed. But if we're talking about Copa Americas and World Cups, I can't tell you that this is important stuff because we know what the team is.
I mean, the only thing I'd say is you have to be reminded that, particularly about the injury issue, we saw in the stands, Tyler Adams still sat up there watching Bournemouth play in the cold.
Sure.
You know, not Tog, not on the bench, not didn't even look close. So,
yeah, and that's why I said what I'm saying is a little bit of an exaggeration because guys will get hurt. We've seen that with the U.S. We never have a healthy 11 of what our preferred, you know, even like weird, like Dest is not playing in the Nations League because he's got his stupid red card suspension that he's dealing with. So like, I get all that. Like depth is hugely important, but even our depth pieces, I feel like we kind of have a good sense of it. So yeah, I don't know what to take from this, except maybe, who knows?
Take anything. Why do we have to take anything? It's a game that happened.
It's a game that happened. You know, I was saying before, JJ, USA and Slovenia, do you like, if you're, I often refer to it for the US as the greatest game that never happened. Now, the game happened, but it being the greatest game, like we all know what happened next. I don't care how old you are as an American soccer fan. You all know, everyone out there knows about what Landon Donovan did against Algeria to get the U.S. through. But that game, in all honesty, the U.S.-Algeria game probably never should have, it shouldn't have mattered in the way that it did. And I wonder how many of our listeners, like, do people, am I wrong in wondering how, like, if you're young, you don't know much about the USA Slovenia game from that World Cup. Do you think I'm not giving our young audience enough credit?
In terms of a US game that gets replayed or talked about, that was like a multi-goal thriller, this hardly comes up.
And it's because people were so... For people who don't remember it, I'll be so quick here because I think most of our audience does, but the U.S. were down 2 at the half in a hugely important World Cup game. Donovan scored a great goal in the 48th. Then Bradley equalized with maybe the most important goal of his career in the 82nd. And then the U.S., I don't know how else to put it, they won the game. They won this game in the 85th minute on a free kick. Morris Adu scored a brilliant goal in the 85th. And the referee, Komen Koulibaly, inexplicably waved it off. To this day, I don't think anyone knows why. I know Adu said and Donovan have said that they repeatedly asked for explanations. They were given none. No one knows why. And it's maddening. And I think if you made a list of the three greatest robberies in American soccer history, I think this one is on the list. I think number two and three, I think, are some combination of this one and the Germany handball that wasn't called in the 0-2 quarterfinals. Number one for me, people don't want to hear this, but number one on my list for American robberies in U.S. soccer, the Panama Phantom goal in 2017. And I think I knew you were going to say that. It's not talked about enough because people were so mad at the U.S. for losing their game against Trinidad. So people didn't want to give them, they just didn't want to say anything that in some way let them off the hook. But like in a vacuum, Panama did not score. The ball doesn't go over the line. If there's goal line technology, it's not given. And who knows the sliding doors moment that could be. And by the way, Mexico are an example of it because, I mean, they had a game where the U.S. bailed them out and allowed Mexico in through a back door. When Mexico lost their game, they get into the World Cup. Next thing you know, they're in the round of 16 of a World Cup. So like, who knows if Dempsey plays in one more World Cup, what playing in that World Cup in 2018 could have done for Pulisic. I mean, like, we'll never know. But to me, again, people don't want to hear it because we're so mad at the U.S. for not holding up their end. But that phantom goal, it's the greatest robbery in U.S. soccer history. But I bring it up because the Adu Slovenia denied goal. And I always felt so bad for him because, like, look, Morris Adu had a great American soccer career for the U.S. And by the way, he goes off, he scores a goal for Rangers to beat Celtic deep. I mean, what an experience it is for an American to have been able to have done something. He had a great career. But like, you know, JJ, like if you score a winning goal for your country in a huge game in a World Cup, like I don't care who you are, you're etched into a different echelon of remember. Like you're just remembered differently. And Adu had it. he scored a great goal and he could have been one of those guys. And for, inexplicably, it was taken from him and no one knows why. And it's not right.
I'm watching the highlights of the game as you're talking there. And it's always so funny to me how close to the goalkeeper Donovan gets where he absolutely roofs that. He's like
incredible, right?
The goalkeeper just pulls back because he's going to get smashed.
He's terrified.
Yeah.
I just felt bad for Adu. Like, he should have had that moment.
Slovenia, two really sweet goals to go 2-0 up. And that's Bradley. Oh, that's actually, when we were talking about Bradley, did we even mention how good that goal was?
Yeah.
Like, that's a really good finish coming up off the bounce. Again,
I'm telling you, it's a legendary game. But because people were so mad about how it ended, Donovan said afterwards that they were gutted with the 2-2 result, even though it kept their World Cup alive. Getting that point.
Oh man, that's clutch. Absolutely clutch. Are they going to show the Dislow goal? Donovan free kick. They are.
It's not hard to find.
Oh Lord. Oh my God.
And by the way, so I went back and rewatched it too.
I can't even see.
It's crazy.
If anything, Bradley's been fouled by the number 18.
JJ, I was watching the BBC. I was watching the BBC's when I was preparing for this podcast. I went back to rewatch and I found the BBC call. Unbiased. I mean, they got no dog in the fight. And they're looking at it and they're saying the same thing you just said. They're like, if anything, there's like eight Americans being held by Slovenian players.
I mean, Demerit,
I
think Jay Demerit at the far post has a bit of a stranglehold on someone, but like, I'm not.
It's an incredible error. And anytime I see the US and Slovenia playing, my mind just goes immediately. I was watching that game at Jack Dempsey's in Midtown.
Ripper.
Where I then went for the US Algeria game too, which was incredible.
And you got really drunk, I heard.
But it was I'll never forget the like injustice of it all and just how the frustration of it. And yeah, I always think about that.
That must have been a time in your life, you know, where's Andrew gone? He's gone off to watch soccer at a bar.
Yeah. I mean,
and
you do
like,
what you want.
13,
right?
14 years ago, and you'd be like, what? Really?
No. It was for a World Cup. Oh, this is, of all the things you've said about American soccer, this is your worst.
No,
this
I'm talking
egregious.
About your family. Your family. Like,
why?
Well, it's soccer, not that like your weird little fetish interest that they found weird. They found odd and
maybe
disturbing.
In 2002, right. When I was a senior in high school and I was setting an alarm to wake up at 3 a.m. to watch like the U.S. and Poland, maybe then they would have said it. But by 2010, no, it was just part of who I was.
I'm just trying to get a timeline, you know?
Part of just who I was at that point.
Okay. All right.
Wow. So there you go. I don't know if everyone go back and watch the Morris Adu goal and get angry all over again because it's not
damn
right.
Good finish. Damn good finish.
He goes into he becomes a forever name in American soccer lore. And as good as he was, I don't know that
he's not that. He's not
And it's a shame because he got robbed of it and no one knows why. He deserves an explanation from that ref and he's never been given one. It's not right, JJ.
I wonder, do I still have any contact for him? For Morris Adu, and we'd send him along this segment just for solidarity purposes.
Yeah, we're with you. We stand united. I wonder if he has, like, when the U.S. plays Slovenia, if he's like, boss, I can't work this one. It's like PTSD. Like, I can't.
But they don't do it that often, and I'm sure, like, he probably called up his boss and said, I can't work this one. And his boss went, who's playing who now?
Right. If you're someone who was not well-versed in that, go back and watch the highlights. It's really something. Let's see, JJ, a couple more things before we get out. Some marquee results from around Europe, like we talked about. What a weekend. Might have been a quiet one in the Premier League, but good Lord. Bayern Munich, horrible, unbelievable loss. 1-0 to Werder Bremen. I saw somebody... Was it Billy T? One of like the Tottenham fan accounts that I love tweeted something like, does Kane have to leave Bayern now to win a trophy? Like the same, like the tweets that everybody tweeted for the last 5 years about does Kane have to leave Tottenham? I mean, it's starting to look like it's whatever we're waiting for this turnaround to occur. This was a huge blow to Bayern's title hopes.
And Werder Bremen had a really good goal ruled off in the first half. And I'm still not sure why it was. I mean, he was onside. He started his run, the striker in his own half, and finished well past Manuel Neuer. Yeah,
maybe Komen Kolobali was the referee.
This is a real it's a real problem for them. And then Leverkusen,
what a game!
It was a brilliant game, and I mean, Xavi Simons was superb for Leipzig. I thought
his goal looked like Dele Alli's against Crystal Palace.
It It's except not quite
the final
as
touch.
Good.
The final touch wasn't on the volley, but the like kicking it to yourself from one side of your body around to the, and turning to the other to finish it looked a lot like it.
And it was really Leipzig's inability to defend from set pieces that kind of killed them in the end in this game, and a huge win. Because like we said, it kind of opens up a little bit now for Werder Bremen. I think they have one other big team to play in this stretch. And then
Leverkusen,
Leverkusen. And then it opens up a little bit for them. But now it's on now. It's really, really on.
Yep, very much so.
And if you're a Bundesliga executive that's not affiliated with Bayern Munich, how delighted are you to see this? For the marketability of your league and the visibility of your league.
Yeah, I mean, look, last year was an incredible title race in the Bundesliga
seven
as well.
7 points. But, I mean, Bayern have a game in hand, but still 7 points.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Leverkusen have Mönchengladbach next.
And Leverkusen still have not lost this season. Club.
Yeah, winnable Darmstadt. And then they have February 10th. That's the one that's... They've got Bayern Munich at home. Woo!
Yeah. That's the big one. Although, I mean, look, they've given themselves a little bit of a cushion now where they could lose that and still be just fine. Unbelievable. So, yeah, great, very compelling weekend in the Bundesliga and in Spain as well. Real Madrid come back from 2-0 down at the half against Almeria, they're awful. They're awful. They have not won this year. They're rooted to the bottom. They're 20th. They're going down 6 points up to this point in the season. And they go to the Bernabeu and they're 2 goals up. JJ, this game, the controversial nature of what went on in the second half of this one, it's just...
Explain it to me.
Well, Real Madrid's first goal. So the ball's played into the middle of the box. It's kind of like bodies are around. The ball looks like it goes through. Bellingham tries to get to the end of it. He can't quite. He slides to get it, goes out. And you think that's it. There's not a whole lot. No one's saying anything. And then all of a sudden, the referee's going over to the monitor. And you're like, what? And then in the replay, you see that maybe there is a handball as the ball was going through through the box. But like, Joselu was kind of pushing the defender, and he might have sort of pushed his arm into the ball. It's close. The referee gives it. So it's like, oh, so Almeria are furious. Goal for Madrid, convert the penalty, and they're on their way back 2-1. Then right after that, Almeria come right back down. They score, and they go up 2 goals. And it's like, wow, after all that controversy on the handball, it's probably that might be it right there. But then it's brought back the referee again. You're not expecting it. He's going to the monitor again. Well, what's this for? And in the buildup, I forget who it was for Almeria. Lopi, I think it was. He took the ball off Bellingham. And in the process, his hand kind of scraped Bellingham's face. Wasn't hard, but he won the ball and Bellingham made a lot of it and went down, grabbed his face. And you kind of didn't see it because like the ball went back the other way so quickly. But the ref goes to the monitor, sees it, takes it off the board. So Almeria, again, screwed by VAR.
Oh, my God. I'm watching it here.
And then the second Real Madrid goal, Vinicius, it gets played into him. From the first look of it, it looked like he headed it in. You see it again, and it comes off what appears to be his arm. And the referee, to his credit, was on it, waved it off immediately. You think, okay, now play will continue. But nope, there he goes again, off to the monitor for a third time. And the commentators on it is Derek Ray. I forget who he was with. They're looking at it saying, no, this is not going to get waved off. Referee made the right decision. And they'd think nothing of it. And then the referee, after he goes to the monitor, points goal. No one could believe it. I mean, the ball looks like it hits Vinicius' arm. Is it shoulder? Where is the line between shoulder and arm? The referee saw what he believed was enough to overrule the initial decision, which I was pretty stunned by. And so, and then, you know, finally,
it looks like his shoulder.
It's close. It's very close. And then finally, after this, all these injustices, Almeria's manager, he gets red carded, and like the Gaisca Garitano gets sent off in stoppage time. And then right after he's sent off, it's 2-2. And then sure enough, Danny Carvajal tucks home the winner in the 99th minute. What a huge 3 points it could be for Real Madrid. You know, it's interesting because, people will think certain things based on stuff that I've said recently. about Real Madrid, how they're maybe my favorite team to watch play. However, as a game is transpiring, you root for who you root for. Like, I'm a neutral in this game, and Almeria are terrible. They're 20th. They have 6 points. They're at the Bernabeu. You can't help but root for a certain team. And I just found myself so drawn to them and wanting to see them do it, because it felt like, I don't know if any of these calls were gross injustices, but it's just like, you felt like Almeria were very hard done by this. They need all the help they can get to beat Real Madrid. They don't need to be playing against the referees as well. But JJ, it reached a point where, even though I was kind of wanting to see them win, I had reached that point where it got so hilarious to me that all of these 50-50, hugely controversial 50-50s kept going against them. I stopped rooting for them to win. I was just rooting for more controversial decisions. I wanted to see how far could this go before Gaisco Garitano lost his effing mind and pulled his team off the pitch or something. I wanted to see, like, how many more of these can this poor guy take before he really has a mental breakdown on the field. And he got sent off eventually. But it was just an unbelievable bit of drama playing itself out over and over again in this game for this poor, for the worst team in La Liga at the Bernabeu. And like, you looked at some of them, like, I don't know if any of the calls are real. Like, they might have made all three right calls. It's just like a horrible set of coincidences that they're all kind of 50-50s that could go either way. They all went for Real Madrid against this little team trying to win at the Bernabeu. And it was, in like sort of a dark, disturbing way, kind of hilarious and sad for them.
No, some of those decisions, they're so tight, so marginal.
They are.
Again, no VAR, none of this happens. None of it. So. The slap in the face to Bellingham is...
He makes a lot of it.
Not having it. Not having it.
What do you mean? Not a foul?
No, it's not a foul.
Yeah, but are you surprised that they would call it? Especially once it goes to VAR, that's always getting brought back.
Probably not.
And then meanwhile, so that happened. Then Girona know that the pressure's now on them. They go down a goal really early, come back to beat Sevilla 5-1. Holy cow. Artem Dovbyk with a hat trick and scoring goals in the 13th, 15th, 19th minutes, an insane turnaround. And one of the standouts, not just from this game, but this season, has been Savinho, Brazilian 19-year-old. He was incredible in this game. And you're already hearing, I mean, put your money on Man City now. You know, he's on loan from Troyes in Ligue 2 in France. Now he's been loaned to Girona. They're all City Group properties. This is all building toward, like, this is all just a machine.
It's just an internal transfer.
It's designed, yes. And it's all, he's even said, like, what's the quote? There was some quote that I saw where he said something the effect of, like, you know, I'm hired to play for Man City. Like, it's almost something to that effect. Like, this is all pushing him to that direction.
This is why Girona winning the league would be so bad. So bad, this kind of stuff.
I mean, yeah, I guess, but I still say, like, Christian Stuani scored their fifth goal. Like, he was like, a Southampton reject or something. Like, they are still, like, you, I get your point. Like, you don't want to see more
success. Multi-club ownership is bad.
Right. However, if you just look at their team compared to the Barcelona's and Real Madrid's and Atletico Madrid's, like, it is, they're very good, Girona, but it is still, I think it is still amazing that they're where they are in the table. I will at least grant them that. Doesn't mean you're wrong. We can talk about multiple.
But a lot
ownership.
Of these players, just because we don't know them, doesn't mean they aren't quality, and doesn't mean that they
are. No, they are quality. But yeah, look at Real Madrid. Look at Barcelona.
Yeah, all right.
And with that, we can kind of go into the January transfer news. So Bayern Munich in the news, they're looking to make a move for Newcastle's Kieran Trippier.
Odd, very odd.
Really interesting. And then almost as interesting, there's also reports that Al-Shabaab in Saudi Arabia are bidding for Miguel Almiron. And it sounds like this is pretty much done. He just has to agree to it, which I haven't seen that he has yet.
No, apparently he's interested. There's no personal terms that can be worked. But again, you know, here I am negotiating with.
So this is right. And this is where it's interesting because, you know, obviously this is where like the whole Saudi ownership thing with Newcastle raises eyebrows. Because like if Newcastle are worried about staying on the right side of the Premier League's PSR, which we are now seeing is a very real threat to some of these clubs that have spent a ton of money in a short time frame, then there's this sense that Newcastle have like an ever-present safety valve, being able to offload players. I don't know that I could say this definitively, but potentially for overinflated costs to remain in good standing. And other clubs don't necessarily have that advantage. Now, having said that, it should also be stated that Al-Shabaab, the club that Almiron's being linked to, are not one of the four clubs in the Saudi league that is owned by the PIF.
But who are they owned by?
I forget the guy's name, but I did look it up earlier.
Right, and what his business is and how that may be linked to the government of Saudi Arabia anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I just know that the PIF owns four clubs in the Saudi league, and Al-Shabaab is not one of them. So I don't know. Still raises eyebrows. Is it Newcastle kind of, if they lose Trippier and Almiron in a season where they're already like, I mean, they're stretched so thin, that's them. That's a white flag on this season. And let's just reset and try to get our finances in order and do this again, you know, in the summer. That's the end of this season.
At this point in his career, particularly on the run he's on, the run of form, Almiron, whatever, we kind of know what Almiron is. He's a nice little player, but he's not really a top class player. But Kieran Trippier, considering how poor he's been for Newcastle, what are Bayern Munich going to do?
Well, he's been poor lately. He has still done Kieran Trippier things really well. Like, I think if you look at big chances created, like some of those metrics, he's still like top three in so many of those. He just he ran out of gas, and he had a horrible 2 or 3 weeks that I think has colored the way we look at his season. But the things that Trippier does well, playing in a ball, setting up others, he is still doing those things. He's just had some defensive meltdowns and horrible moments. So I still think he could go to Bayern and be helpful to them.
If you told me Trippier and Dier would be at Bayern,
Harry Kane is just plucking his friends out now.
Yeah.
They're going to Kane and just saying, who's gettable that can help us that you
just
are
needs buddies.
That you can recruit.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see, staying in the Bundesliga, Jadon Sancho, of course, made his loan move to Borussia Dortmund, earned a penalty. Then, did you see, JJ, after that, he had a really awkward exchange with Niklas Füllkrug over who was going to take the penalty.
I mean, Füllkrug ended up taking it, right?
Yeah, and scored it. Jadon Sancho's got a little bit of nerve. You just got here, bud. This game's still in the balance. It's 1-0.
Desperate to get everything back on track.
Yeah. And they kind of laughed about it afterwards, but in the moment, Füllkrug like wouldn't even look at him. It's like, no, get it, beat it. And their time did not overlap in Dortmund together, I don't believe. So Füllkrug wouldn't have cared one bit about Sancho's.
Oh no, their time did not overlap at all, not even close. So why would he care? I know, I mean, we know what strikers are like.
I thought Jadon Sancho thought it was a little bit nervy to do that.
We've heard things about him now. And
he might be nervy. Yeah. And then finally, JJ, Jordan Henderson is officially an Ajax player now after leaving the aforementioned Saudi league. I texted you this the other day. I'll ask you again now on the pod. If I gave you three options as to what Henderson's primary motivation was for wanting to leave, option one, he hated the league. Option two, he was actually okay with it, but his family did not like their life in Saudi Arabia. Or option three, he started to worry about his chances of making the England team. Which one of those do you think is most... By the way, it could be all of the above.
It could be all. It is worth noting his family didn't live in Saudi Arabia. So they lived in Bahrain. So he was allowed to live somewhere else. he hated the league. I would say it's one and three. It's a bit of one and a bit of three, but I'd say he did hate the league. Standard was way below. Al-Ittifaq hadn't won a game in weeks. Standard was very poor. I'm sure he hated that. And then he really realized that he was going to struggle for Euro 2024. All stuff he could have figured out before he even answered the phone to say, hello, I'll go to Saudi Arabia.
He probably knew all those things, but he thought that the money that he was going to get, this last big payday, would be worth it. And he might have thought that his equity with Southgate was enough that it could still carry him through. All of those things, I think, have gone wrong. The money has wound up not being worth it. and Southgate. I don't know. It would have been very interesting. I don't see how Jordan Henderson makes that England team. I don't. And by the way, him going to Ajax, I don't know that this helps that either. It might more than playing in Saudi Arabia.
I don't know. But he was in the beggars can't be choosers zone at that point, Andrew. So, he deferred. There's a chance he gets none of the money that he earned in those 3 months because he deferred all his payments. So he wouldn't have money in the calendar year 2023, which would be taxable by his Majesty's customs and or his Majesty's Inland Revenue, or customs or whatever body is involved in that. So all those things. One of the great blunders, and one of the great to torpedo your Liverpool captaincy like that to do this. Truly, truly, we'll look back at this and one of the epic dolt moves in the history of football.
On so many levels. From a football perspective, the reputational hit that he took. He botched it. And he's, I guess, trying to turn it all around now. But I think in a lot of people's minds that ship has sailed. Pretty incredible. JJ, that might be it.
It's an enormous podcast considering how little there was at the weekend.
But there's always so much. Even when there's nothing, there's a ton. We'll be back, of course, midweek. There will be much, much, much more to get to in the world of soccer. Remember, hit the store, caughtoffsidepod.com. Get your t-shirts. They're beautiful. They're just gorgeous. Get more than one. There's multiple colors. And get to voting for the Sports Podcast Awards. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. To you, I say...
Check you later, phone boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.